Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass.
Driven with SunPass.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli bring you the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Baptist Health and Everbank.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, begins right now.
Here we are at the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Jaguars Thursday underway. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli. Glad you're with us tonight after the Gus Bradley radio show. Plenty to get to today. The Buccaneers and the Jaguars wrapped up back-to-back nights of days of practice on the practice fields outside of Everbank. They'll play Saturday here. Little fight today on the field for the first time. That was the preview going into the week of practice. Oh, there's going to be fights, and the Patriots and Bears fought twice, three times. What's going on? One little thing at the end of the day, and that's it.
I'm a big believer in that, you know, football fights are kind of worthless because, you know, I mean, guys are wearing helmets. What are you going to do? Punch them in the helmet, break
their
hand?
That's what we did.
If you're going to throw a punch, you know, which happens in football, you got to have a little bit of sense of where to throw it.
Or at least have an open hand.
I mean, Dante Fowler got in a little scrum today.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working against, it was kind of
Lamar Dotson and Ali Marpet.
Ali Marpet, which is the right guard. And it's a stunt, so he comes underneath, and Ali Marpet ends up kind of torquing Dante to the ground. And Dante's helmet came off because there was a hand that was up high from Dotson, the tackle. It wasn't like it was egregious or anything. I mean, it was, you know, things like that happen. And Dante gets up, and he's pretty angry, and throws a punch. And it was a close fist punch.
Top of the helmet.
I mean, right into the helmet.
Let me tell you this. Marpet didn't feel it.
No.
Did not affect him one bit.
But, I mean, if you're going to throw a punch, I mean, and I'm okay. Look, fights happen. Throw it somewhere where it's going to do something. You know, go to the neck. You know, go to the – you know, right underneath the shoulder pads, sternum area.
You're dirty, Jeff.
You know,
if you're going to do it, get your money's worth.
Go to stomach.
Dante was fortunate from the standpoint that Ali Marpet didn't decide to throw a punch himself because Dante had no helmet on.
Yeah.
So Marpet could have delivered a blow that would have hurt a lot more than the one to the helmet.
Broke up pretty quickly. You know, it wasn't
anything major.
Yeah,
the cavalry came in, and then they kind of
a couple cheap shots in there I enjoyed watching.
Yeah, which, you know, it was a little scrum. I wasn't even there to see it live.
I was watching the other field when it happened.
Yeah, I was.
I didn't even know. No one knew there was even a fight because it was on the other field. I was actually asked by, I believe it was Mark Lamping, after the practice, the president, saying, how'd it go out there, and were there any fights or anything? I said, no, I'm pretty calm. Everything's fine. Come back in here and find out. I'm like, oh, there was a fight. I guess I was wrong.
Hmm. Yeah, but it was pretty – it was – I thought that it would be a little bit more – intense, you know, because a lot of times you get two teams together, and I'm not saying that the practice is relaxed, but both Tony and I kind of looked at the practice yesterday and said, you know, we're surprised that the tempo is as controlled as what it's been, you know, because sometimes, I mean, look, pushing, shoving, you know, that happens. You don't really have any of that. You know, so, I mean, I give credit to Dirk Cutter. I give credit to Gus Bradley for, you know, making sure that their players were very aware of what the tempo needed to be and the respect level that needed to occur on the field so that, you know, some of those things didn't happen regularly because sometimes that happens all the time. But, look, there's never been NFL fights that have come close to some of the baseball fights that have happened over the years.
Yeah, no doubt.
I was watching some highlight where it was the Yankees and the Orioles.
Oh, there's a classic one, yeah.
That they were showing on ESPN. I'm going, you know, football doesn't have anything like that.
No.
You know, it was where one of the guys, Tino hit him in the back, and Daryl Strawberry was in the mix. And, I mean, it was
going into dugouts and a whole thing, yeah. So, and they don't have helmets on. So
no.
There you go. So what did the Jaguars – you talked a little bit with Gus about this in the previous show, the Gus Bradley show, but a different look – every day at practice the last 2 days, that's a good thing for both sides of the ball, right?
Yeah, no, listen, you always get to work against other guys. And, you know, and defensively the Buccaneers are a more two high safety look, you know, split safeties compared to the Jaguars, which are single high safety and the strong safety in the box. So you get different looks right there for Blake to see different coverages, which is different route combination, his reads and progression and how you go through that. You know, both teams are, you know, four down offensive linemen, so it's a little bit more similar for the offensive line for the Jaguars. But one of the differences is the Jaguars are an under front, which I'm not going to get into details, but just different fronts, even though there's four guys. There's no reason to get into it. So you get to work on different schemes and different blocking combinations and some things you haven't done a lot of coming up to this point. And then defensively, now you're working – listen, defensively, you get to work against good receivers.
Big receivers.
Yeah, you get to work against good receivers on your own team. I mean, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, I mean, quality, good receivers. I mean, we've talked about Allen Robinson's number one. But now you get to work against good receivers who are different receivers. I mean, Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson are two of the biggest receivers in the NFL. And Vincent Jackson can't run like he once did, but Mike Evans can. And he's a big boy, and against a young quarterback, I've always been a fan of Jameis Winston and think he's going to have a really bright career. And he's a good young quarterback, and you can see what he can do. The offensive line, good work. You know, I thought their two tackles played better than I thought they were. Damar Dotson and Donovan Smith both are quality players, and that's always good work for the ends. They work against those guys. So I thought overall it was really good. I think the only thing, and Jeff alluded to it, that surprised me a little bit, and it's not a right or wrong. What this looked like to me was a really good practice and good tempo, strong. I mean, going at, you know, they were working hard and going at it. Where maybe it's because how the head coaches, like Jeff said, framed it and what their expectation of both their teams. Where sometimes, and at least my experience of doing it, when you worked against another team, it was not game speed, but there was a little bit more reckless.
A little more edge.
That's a better word to say it.
Yeah.
And this looked like, listen, we're going to go hard, and they went hard. And we're going to be physical, but you know what? We're going to still protect, you know, we're not going to go over the top. And if we have a guy in a compromising position, we're not going to try to bury him.
We would try to bury him.
Yeah,
other guys would get hit in that scenario. But, I mean, I thought, like, the wide receivers, the respect for the wide receivers, the quarterbacks, and the running backs, that's kind of – where that edginess sometimes
guys,
can cross the line.
Yeah, like usually sometimes, usually what happens all the time, or especially when Jeff and I are playing, one of those receivers go across the middle and someone's taking a cheap shot.
And
it goes from there. And then our running back's running the ball and it's supposed to be thud.
And then
next
it's like hockey. You know, it's hockey. It's like self-policing. Well, their guy took a shot, so now we got to take a shot.
I mean,
but the most value in it, you know, coaches always point to scheme. You know, and Gus talks about, well, they play split safety, we play single high, and so it's a great look for our offense. I mean, as a player, I liked it just because I got to see different guys. You know, going back in early days, I mean, I got to go against Jim Lachey, which was a totally different player than Jeff Criswell, who was, you know, on my team in New York. And heck, you just, you know, for example, with the Buccaneers, A.J. Cann is not going to see a guy like Gerald McCoy every day in practice on his own team. He's a different player than Malik Jackson. You know, when you look at the other guy, Clint McDonald, I mean, he's a short, stumpy guy that's got unbelievable quickness. Well, you don't have a guy like that on your roster. You've got different types of players. So going against different types of players that have different strengths, different abilities – is always has value, because then you get to do certain things that maybe you wouldn't do. Like, for example, you know, if I was going against Buscelli every day in practice, you know, I used to love to be able to work a move that I called the Mr. Miyagi. Mm. And the Mr. Miyagi was wax on, wax off.
Yes.
Okay, you remember that thing?
Oh,
where
yeah,
he did that little thing in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a pass rusher, the wax off was you take two hands up, and then you're swiping the hands away from the tackle and then working the edge to the corner. Well, I couldn't use that against Tony because he hit his hands. So, I mean, I one of my patented moves I couldn't use in practice because it doesn't work.
I wasn't going to give my hands
it
ever.
It doesn't work against Tony. You know, so, you know, and against Leon Searcy, it didn't work as well because he kept his hands back and then all of a sudden he'd blow you up.
Then he impaled your chest.
Yeah. You know, so it's nice to have, you know, different guys to work moves to and approaches, you know, because I got tired of using the same move on Buscelli all the time in practice, you know, because I had five other moves, you know, and two of them worked with Tony sometimes.
So did you just admit that you got owned by Tony in practice?
No, it was good battles. Listen,
went back and forth. Okay, I'm just saying.
No, but to Jeff's point, so a perfect example is, you know, listen, if I, in practice, working with Jeff, I mean, I was never worried about the speed. I mean, that's not Jeff's game. Now, for, you know, later on, Tony Bracken's game, that offered a change of pace and you had to worry about the speed. And so with Jeff, it was power. a good inside move, and I knew his hand, so I was never going to give my hand, so it didn't matter. And so that was great. We got great work, and we knew each other, and we'd have good battles in one-on-ones and during team, and, you know, we'd make each other better with what we respectively did. But then when, you know, you work against, you know, if Tampa came in and a guy like Reagan Upshaw, or you went to, you know, Atlanta and Chuck Smith, a really good pass rusher, they did different things. So now I got to, you know, and I think for young players, what it does is it forces you to learn the game plan and how you're going to have an approach against different
adapt.
Players. Because not everyone's the same. And a perfect example is that if you watch Dante Fowler the 2 days, and he was working against DeMar Dotson, a big, huge human being.
Big, long guy.
6'9", they say 350. I mean, 315. He's not 315. He's at least 325, 330. I mean, he's a big, long dude. And the first two rushes, Dante decided, I'm going to try to run just straight at into him, and he got engulfed. And so it's a perfect example of, like, okay, as a young player like Dante, it's like, I need to learn to have a change. I need to learn to use my gifts and what I'm really good at and what God's given me, which is speed and quickness, before I get to the power. And so now, hey, I've learned that lesson. So Dante will be a better player if he learns from this. He's like, hey, listen, I need to really force the edge and use speed against especially these bigger, powerful tackles that might not move as well. And so let me work on that. Instead of getting into the habit of doing, you know, sometimes in camp you get in a rut and hey, this worked and you just keep on doing the same thing over and over again. Instead of changing it up and understanding each guy you play against is going to give you a different opportunity and a different challenge. And that's so important for young players.
And to continue on with Dante, I mean, Dante yesterday and today, he got stuffed. I mean, DeMar Dotson ate him up.
But
that's a great learning experience for a guy like Dante Fowler, in that he learns that, like Tony said, you know, there are certain things you can't do against certain guys. And I think, you know, one of the reasons for the fight that happened was probably a little bit of frustration on his part.
Yeah, a couple of days of getting stoned. A
couple of days of not really having much of an impact. But that's the kind of experiences that if you didn't have these practices with the Bucks, he would never get it. Yeah. He would have never have gotten that lesson. You know, and Todd Walsh will use that as a great teaching tool for Dante in going forward, that, hey, Dante, these different type of players need different types of approaches.
The Buccaneers are going back home next week, and they'll host the Cleveland Browns in another joint practice. What do you make of having back-to-back weeks of another team coming in? Is it too much? Where do you draw the line?
The way camp is now, I would do it. I don't think it's too much. I think in the old days when you're grinding away and you have a lot of practices, one is plenty. But the way they practice,
yeah, but not in week three of the preseason.
To me, Jeff, though, the way they practice and the way they control it and the way they really protect guys, I understand what you're
one
saying.
And two
I'd probably
is
go week one, week two.
Yeah, week one
week
and two is better
because you want a game plan week three.
Yeah, week three is a game plan week, and you want to get the players accustomed to a routine.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And you also want them to have the ability to digest a playbook because you're putting in a game plan. Now, it's not the full Monty, but it's, you know, it's
first taste of what it's going to be like regular season. So I agree with Jeff there. Timing, I don't like. But having two teams back-to-back weeks, if you do week one, week two.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you're getting limited reps because of the new CBA and how the coaches' hands are tied and what they can and can't do. And that's fine. That's the world we live in. That's not criticism. It's just reality. And so if you can get 2 weeks, you know, before preseason game one, preseason game two, especially one where it's really a series or two your starters are getting, man, I think the extra reps during the week are very valuable.
This Saturday night, it's football night in Jacksonville. The Jacksonville Armada kick off in the afternoon against Minnesota United. That's at Community First Park. And then at 7:30, the Jags host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Discounted tickets available at jaguars.com/FNIJ. We'll come back and discuss the Jags' offense, including the left tackle spot. What's the story on Kelvin Beachum? More Jaguars Thursday coming up on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, continues right now.
Welcome back. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli. Jaguars Thursday rolls along. The Southern Chevy dealers are giving you a chance to win a VIP game day experience and a brand new Chevy Malibu. Register at your local Southern Chevy dealership today for your chance to win. Visit ChevyWinners.com for more information. We promised offensive line talk. Kelvin Beachum got a little more work today. Continues to kind of get back a little closer, ever closer. Doesn't sound like he's going to play Saturday night against the Bucks, but what do you make of the last couple of days from Kelvin Beachum, Tony?
I think it's very positive. I think Kelvin is working through the process, in my opinion, of the mental side of it right now, which is a huge process. And so, and people probably listening here that's like, oh, just get over it. I mean, come on.
Fight through it.
What's the big deal? As someone who's gone through it, and Jeff has gone through it as well, it's real. You come to a point where the doctor says your knee is stable, you have most of your strength back, and you can go out there by yourself and run around and move around and everything else, and then you have to have the mental ability to overcome of working in traffic and the confidence that that knee is going to be there. And it's not going to go anywhere. And it sounds easy, but it's not. And the hardest part, at least for me, was there's no way to get over that except for doing it. At some point, it's like, you know, jumping off the high dive. You can get all psyched up, and you can know the water's under there, and you can know everything's going to be all right, and you can know that nothing's going to happen. But until you jump and hit that water, you know, there's that little bit of doubt. And that's where I think that it's a natural process, and I think it was very – good to see Kelvin out there working in team, limited reps, but he's moving well. He had good pass sets. He's a natural left tackle as far as the way he sets and moves and uses his hands. Run blocking looked fine, and now it's just the process. I wouldn't play him this week if I was Gus or Dave. I would shoot for to get him a quarter or so in game three. And see how he responds, and then with the goal of starting, and hopefully he can start and play a full game in Green Bay.
Let me add this to it. You know, there are mental hurdles that you've got to be able to overcome with an ACL, but there are also physical aspects to that mental hurdle.
Absolutely.
You know, and that your knee is not the same, and it feels different. You know, the doctors, yeah, they say it's stable, but it's not 100% strength of what it used to be. Mm-hmm. There are certain movements that make it feel different, and also make it hurt. And part of the mental hurdles that Tony is talking about is being able to fight through some of that, and knowing that you're going to be okay. But the fact of the matter is that you're still not back to normal, and it takes time to do that. And Kelvin Beachum, just like Tony was, just like I was coming back from an ACL, there is a certain protocol management that needs to be followed to allow the player to come back, because, you know, there's things that are needed, and that's rest. But, you know, the work also has to be put in. But, you know, so it's a delicate balance of getting the work put in, but then also getting the amount of time off to allow the knee to recover. Because I remember very specifically the last preseason game that I played when I was coming back from an ACL. And it was the last preseason game. And back then you played, you know, a half in the last preseason game. Things are a little different now. And I think I played like 21 snaps. And I felt great. I felt great. Next morning, man, couldn't barely walk. And then struggled all week in practice the week of the opener, and was able to play in the opener. But I wasn't the same player in the opener. And I think offensive line, I'm not trying to downplay the importance of that position or the athleticism that's required, but if there's any position that should have the ability to come back quicker than others, it would be offensive line compared to corner, running back. You know, I think quarterbacks, offensive linemen, it's easier for them to come back and get back to the flow of the game.
Because you're not stopping and starting as much, well, you know, full sprint and all that.
Which is different.
Right?
You are actually, right. I mean, because you're changing direction, especially in pass blocking and everything else, and you're driving with the knee, but it's just different. I don't even know how to explain it, but it is different. But I also think what's different is every guy, and I want to be clear, it's not a toughness issue. It's not. It's just how your body's made up and everything else. And I remember the process I went through. You know, it was surgery in January, and my goal was to play every game, and got ready for the opener, played 10 plays in the preseason, didn't feel great, but got through it. Doctor said your knees, you know, I had most of my strength back, and I went and played, and it hurt like heck the next day. And there was a process, and Gus talked about every player understanding and getting a process. Him and Jeff talked about that, and it's how important it is for the young guys. It's also important for a guy coming back from an injury because your process changes a little bit. What it took me to get ready for practice, to get through practice, the limited reps, prepare for a game. Knowing, and I however my makeup was, I had told myself is my knee is not going to feel perfect. And it was very frustrating at times.
You know, unfortunately, like when Tony was going through his rehab, you know, Tom Coughlin had these rules in place where you got to practice to play.
Yep.
And Tony's situation could have been handled better.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Tony should have been given off every Wednesday.
Yeah.
That entire season coming back from a knee.
No, I didn't have that.
Didn't happen. You know, but I think that now, you know,
it's different now. It's and they'll take good care of him. But you still, as a player, I think. If you wait for your knee to feel perfect, you're going to be waiting a long time. That's my theory. And if you're talented, and Kelvin Beachum is a talented athlete, and he moves very well, and he's got to just, like every player, get to the point of saying, okay, it's not going to be perfect right away. But as long as I can help the team, I can play close to what my expectations are, I'm not jeopardizing my knee or anybody else out there, you know, get the process of knowing it's going to be sore the next day and work through that process. And the great thing is now the way the NFL is and the way coaching staffs and the medical staffs and everything approach these injuries, he'll be given time to recover through the week and get back. And so this was I thought going against other players this week was a big step for Kelvin. And I think it's very positive. And he'll work through the process with the trainers and everything. And I expect him to be ready to go, hopefully opening day. I mean, I don't know if I expect it or hope. Because I think he's one of the best five offensive linemen on this team.
How long does Blake Bortles play Saturday?
Half. Yeah, half. I mean, I think you want to be able, and I think Gus had mentioned this, you know, about the desire to potentially get your offense a two-minute drill. You know, because if you can go a half and then let's say in preseason game number three, you'd like to go in a perfect world a half and then come out for a series in the second half.
Come out at halftime one time.
And then in the fourth preseason game, I mean, nobody's going to play. I mean, it's unfortunately that
game. And then we have to work really hard.
Is away. It's in Atlanta. And we'll be talking a lot about guys that this is their last opportunity to make an impression upon the team, to make the team in the coach's minds, you know. But with the fourth preseason game being a throwaway, and you wonder why anybody would want to go and watch a fourth preseason game, because it can be tough to watch because a lot of those guys that are playing are guys that are going to be either on a practice squad or unavailable. You know, they're going to be on the street. You know, so, yeah, half. I'd like to see him play half, and especially against a Bucs team. And then, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, that's a primetime game. You know, it's going to be shown.
One of the better teams
the
in the AFC too.
Really good football team, and that's when you'd like to go ahead, get your work in, get a good test, make a good showing on national TV, and then that gives you, what, 2 weeks basically to get ready for the opener.
You know, I'd like to see a half. My guess is, if they play a quarter and a half and they're lighting it up like they did against New York and they're going up and down the field, they might be out a little bit earlier than a half. I think, if it's, you know, normal flow of a game and ups and downs, then I think they get a half. I mean, I think one thing that we've seen with Gus and his staff, that's pretty fluid. They have a plan. They know what they want to do. But they're also going to, you know, let how guys feel, how they go into the game as far as, you know, nicks and bumps and bruises. We saw that with Jalen Ramsey last weekend. There's some fluidity to the situation. So, but my guess is close to a half with Blake. And in a perfect world, you get him a two-minute drive.
Back to the offensive line for a moment. Sounds like Brandon Linder could go. He's back at practice this week, and that's good news. Hadn't seen him in the last week and a half.
He's going to go.
Yeah, and listen, you always want your best offensive lineman on the field.
That's right.
And
he's really good. He's
the best offensive lineman on this team, and you want that guy out there. He's developed into the leader, and he has the mental makeup to be that guy, and you want him out there. Because, listen, especially with the offensive line. I think it's a lot of positions, but I know, let me just put it this way. I know with the offensive line, you got to get the five guys out there working together that you're going to go to war with opening day. Because there is something to the continuity of guys working together, understanding, communicating, being on the same page, and getting their work, not just as individuals, but as a group. And that's why I think that week three, and we're jumping ahead a little bit, is an important week for Kelvin Beachum. Because you got it. Because, you know, if Kelvin goes to left tackle, you're moving Luke to left guard.
And Luke's got to get some reps.
He's
got
to get some ref guards to only be fair to him.
They got to get some reps together, too, like in your to your point.
They have not, yeah.
That's going to be, you know, if you go into the opener, you know, in a perfect world, let's say Beachum gets some snaps week three against the Bengals. And then all of a sudden you're resting a lot of guys in that fourth preseason game. I think one guy you probably would not rest and you would want to play him is Luke Jokel getting snaps at left guard. You know, in a perfect world, you'd like to have Beachum next to him, but I don't know if you're going to have that ability to do that. You know, so all of a sudden you're going to go into the opener with a guy coming back from an ACL potentially, coming back from an ACL at left tackle, and then a guy who's been a left tackle his whole life and he's having to play a real game at left guard in the National Football League. That's, you know, it's a little bit concerning, a little unnerving there now.
But you know what? You're not going to play you're not going to play Kelvin Beachum in week four of the preseason for one reason and one reason only. It's a short week. You play Sunday,
yeah,
right. And then you have a Thursday night game. And so you're not going to ask a guy coming back with limited reps off an ACL to play on 3 days rest in a preseason game that doesn't mean anything. Now, I agree with Jeff with the Luke Jokel. Get him reps, and you go from there. You got to put your five best guys out there. And in my opinion, assuming that Kelvin's knee is going to be up to snuff opening day, their five best offensive linemen are Kelvin Beachum, Luke Jokel, Brendan Linder, A.J. Cannon, Jeremy Parnell. That's your five best guys. Now, are they the five best individual players? Are they the five best playing together?
That you don't know.
We got to see how the left guard and left tackle play together.
That you don't know. That's the one thing that makes you a little bit nervous is Luke Jokel, left guard, you know, because it's a different position.
We'll come back and go on the defensive side. What do the Jags defenders have to do this week against Tampa Bay to keep the ball rolling in their direction after a decent outing last week against the New York Jets? This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, continues right now.
World Cup soccer is coming to Jacksonville. Clint Dempsey and the U.S. men's national team will take on Trinidad and Tobago September 6th here at Everbank Field. Get complete details. Buy your tickets today at Ticketmaster.com. Jags and Bucks coming up Saturday night at Everbank Field, and the first time the Jags will officially open Everbank Field for the 2016 season. A lot of folks' first chance to see the new additions, the U.S. Assure clubs. The new Prowl entrance in the south end zone will be in use Saturday night. Tomorrow, by the way, the groundbreaking for the amphitheater and the flex field. Morning.
I'm going to be excited to see because I think they're supposed to show a bunch of renderings and everything.
That's the rumor.
Tomorrow at that.
And on Jaguars.com.
And yeah. A title sponsor. Yeah. So
I got a little sneak preview, who the title sponsor is, but of the renderings. It is nice.
Yeah, I bet that's
how'd
be
you
really
get a
nice
sneak preview?
You know.
Oh, you're the pride.
I got
that's
contacts.
Right. You're on the wall.
I'm just telling you. It is nice. It's something you're going to want to look on Jaguars.com and check out because, I mean, what did you expect? I mean, has Shad Khan done anything?
No.
But anything
it's not amazing,
not
no.
First class in the last 4 or 5 years since he's owned this team? I mean, so it lives up to the reputation that he has established of how he does things in this community, and it's going to be very nice.
Defensively for this Jaguars team facing the Tampa Bay Bucks, what is the next step for this Jaguars D? What do they need to do this week to improve?
First of all, get everybody out on the field. You know, Jalen Ramsey, Tashaun Gibson, you want to see them play. You want to see how they're going to end up playing the nickel situation with, you know, Aaron Colvin being out. You know, so, I mean, I think those things are certainly something to look forward to.
It sounds like Ramsey and Gip are going to go, right?
Yeah, I think they're going to go. The disappointing thing defensively in the back end, you know, after James Sample had a tremendous hit on the running back where the running back couldn't even make it off the field on his own 2 feet. You know, he continues to be out. And I don't know if you guys remember, what was it? It was last year. He had this issue with a shoulder that kept him out a lot.
All year.
And you wonder, is it the same thing that's popped back up again? And if so, there goes your competition. You know, because you were hoping that you would have competition to make both players better, James Sample and Jonathan Cyprian. So that's a little disappointing to see. But, I mean, it's, you know, defensively, I want to see the guys roll. When I say roll, I'm talking about the guys up front, a rotation to where you're seeing everybody play like you would if it was a game. You want to see everybody rolling through their nickel packages. You want to see Cedric Marks rolling in with Jared Odrick and Malik Jackson. And not just, okay, you get 10 plays and then you're done. You want to see them rotate like they're going to do when it gets to the regular season game. And I think we'll see a little bit of that. The disappointing thing, you know, much like last week, you're not going to see Sheldon Day. And, you know, he's a guy that we all were, you know, kind of excited about and watched him throughout the OTAs without pads. He looked fantastic, and then he got the pads on, looked very good. And a back injury has kept him out. And then now you have Michael Bennett that's got a hip, probably not going to play. That's why they signed T.J. Barnes. So you're not going to see – once you get through that first unit, you know, we'll see what happens.
And we've already talked about Cedric on earlier shows, and I mean, this is an opportunity for him to show what he can do now, right? He's going to have the reps.
We've mentioned this before. Cedric needs to play well to make this team, and that's not – you know, any secret. I mean, that's you, every year. I mean, especially when you go out and you spend money on Jared Odrick and you spend money on Malik Jackson. You know, yeah, they spent the money on Cedric Marks, but, I mean, compared to those two guys, it's not as much. And I don't think that, you know, there's a lot of money tied up in him if you were to have to let him go. But the good thing is that Cedric looks like he's making significant progress, because if he is the Cedric of old, he's a really good football player.
If he's the Cedric of old, he's one of the four best pass rushers, and he'll probably be number one nickel.
Yeah, probably.
If he's of the old. I mean, and for the first time in camp, watching the Bucs practices, he looked at times like the Cedric of old. I mean, I think Jeff and I both said early in camp, those first 10 days or so, it's like, man, his legs just don't look like they're catching up to his body. And watching him in one-on-one pass rush, watching him in the team drills, he had some juice back, and had some really nice pass rushes, which was great. I mean, listen, Sen's one of everyone's favorite guys on this team. I mean, great guy, and so he's one of those guys you root for, and you hated watching him. You could tell it was a little bit of a struggle early in camp. So it looks like his legs are getting underneath him and getting that pop back, and that's important, because one of the things I want to see is, you know, you want to see him rush the passer, you want to see him get pressure. And especially in those third down situations with that nickel group, when you have the young guys coming off the edge, and Malik and Roy, I mean, not Roy, but Jared Odrick and Cedric rotating in there inside, Ryan Davis getting some reps, Dan Scuda, and see them rush the passer and get pressure. When you talk about the nickel, the way the first nickel was yesterday is going to be Jalen Ramsey at the nickel and Prince Amukamara and Devon House outside. And that'll be fun to watch and see how they work together and see how Jalen reacts to being in that slot position.
I can't wait to see him. I mean, to play. I mean, whether it be corner, whether it be nickel. You know, I hope that he plays in this game and he plays early, because I want to see Jalen Ramsey matched up against Mike Evans or Vincent Jackson. I mean, that's why you like long corners, is to match up against big guys like those. And so I'm excited to watch him, and I'm most importantly excited to watch him, because, you know, when you watch him in practice, you only get to see so much of what Jalen Ramsey is as a player.
That's right.
Because you're not getting to see the physical nature that he plays the game with, because watching his tape at Florida State, and I know a lot of FSU fans know how he plays the game, he is a striker, and he's incredibly fast, and he can deliver some serious blows wherever they are required. And so I'm excited to watch him, because, you know, watching him practice, he makes me excited. But I know that there's another category of his level of play that we haven't seen yet, and I'm looking forward to seeing it in the first person.
What did you guys see from Miles Jack this week in the practice
JP,
field? Yes, Tony.
Before we go there, I want to ask Jeff a question about the defensive line.
Proceed, please.
Jeff, you look at the Leo position right now, and it's something we've talked about, and you have obviously Dante Fowler and Ngakoue. After that, there's a lot of question marks. What, you know, who is that third Leo? Because you need depth there, especially those are young guys, undersized guys right now where they are in their career, and not a lot of, obviously none, no experience in the NFL. Where does the depth come from the Leo?
After you get past those two, I mean, right now you've got Tyrone Holmes, which I think Tyrone Holmes is going to be on practice squad.
I do too.
Bjorn Werner I don't think is worthy. Chris Smith is having a good camp. He had a decent game against the Jets. Me personally, I like Ryan Davis. And Ryan Davis is starting to get some reps at Leo. So Ryan Davis is kind of, you know, they talk about positional versatility. Like Sendarek can play the nose, the three, and then the strong side end position. Well, Ryan Davis's positional flexibility is he can play Otto, and then he can play Leo. I think Ryan Davis is, in my opinion, should be the third guy because I think he's got enough athleticism. He's played the position before. He's an accomplished pass rusher, and he's a very good inside pass rusher. I don't know if you guys watched him in pass rush yesterday.
That's where he rushes the passer best, by the way.
Oh, my God.
He's a better inside rusher than
inside rusher. I mean, he absolutely chewed up. Whoever he went against, he beat yesterday in practice in one-on-one.
The quickness, is that why?
Quickness, and he's just got it.
He has a knack for it. Whatever reason, and it's funny.
He's got a strong athleticism to him.
It doesn't translate to the outside pass rush like it does inside. For whatever reason, he is like you. And I don't know why, but inside he has a knack, hand use, quickness, strength. And for whatever reason, it doesn't translate as well when he's outside.
No, I mean, but he's adequate outside.
Not saying, but he really causes guards problems, especially guards who aren't as athletic when he's inside.
It will be interesting to see, you know, because you start talking about roster spots, okay, you know, how many defensive linemen, how many linebackers, you know, does Ryan Davis give you the ability to maybe have a guy that kind of fills a little bit of both roles? You know, but Chris Smith is looking good, but if it were me, and I had to make a decision between Chris Smith or Ryan Davis, I'm taking Ryan Davis.
And the reason I would tend to agree, and I think Dan Scuda also can be a guy who you could play at Leo if you needed to.
He's got some reps there, sure.
Because of his strength and his versatility. I think both him and Ryan Davis are very versatile. You know, if you move Scuda out there to get some reps there, then my guess is you move a guy like Miles Jack and start getting him reps at Otto at some point. Because if you look at this team the way it's made up from the defensive line, your strength and you have a lot of good players inside. And so where you want to keep guys, I mean, you have Malik and Roy and Audric who are obviously here. Avery Jones is on this ball club because he's the best backup nose. But then you start mentioning guys like Tyson, Sendarek Marks, Sheldon Day, Michael Bennett. Four guys who are all really good football players and give you different things and are versatile in what they can do. And because of that, I think it limits how many guys you want to keep that are true Leos only. The two you're keeping are Ngakoue and Dante Fowler. And after that, there's a drop-off. And so the question I think Gus and Dave have to ask themselves is, do we want to keep maybe more depth because of the talent we have on the inside, be a little thinner at Leo, knowing that we have position flexibility with a Ryan Davis and or – a Dan Scuda. I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out over the last three preseason games, and that'll be a decision. We'll go down to that last cut after week four of the preseason when they get down to that 53. But that'll be something to watch. Assuming everybody stays healthy, Sheldon Day gets back healthy, and Michael Bennett. That'll be some tough decisions, and you might see this team go deeper on their interior defensive line and that big defensive end that plays to the strong side a lot, which Jared Audrick and Tyson Alualu play right now. So that's something that I'll be watching. I think really be watching this preseason game. Unfortunately, you're not going to see Sheldon Day or Michael Bennett like Logs talked about. Hopefully they can get back. So week three, you really can evaluate all those guys.
Yeah, and just a quick note here. I like Tyson Alualu, who last year you assumed he's on the roster, you know, because he's a really good, solid football player. I don't know if you can say that he's a lock this year, you know, because, you know, he's backing up Audric. Sendarek can play the 4B. You know, he's been doing a little bit of that camp. And then Sheldon Day could probably play a little bit of 4B. Avery Jones plays the 4B. You know, and Tyson is a guy that does have positional flexibility as well. He can kick down and play three and play nose, and you know he's dependable. You know, he's going to give you a solid level of performance. But, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you're talking some different numbers this year now at that position, defensive front, away from the Leo.
And I think that it depends on what they do with Leo.
Yeah.
I mean, how many guys do you keep out there? Do you feel like you need to keep a guy like Chris Smith to keep that depth?
Now, let me ask you this, straight up. If you're the general manager, do you keep Chris Smith?
I do not, because I think he's limited of what he can overall give you. He's a nice player. But if I'm looking at talent and I'm evaluating the entire roster where I can get productivity and with the position flexibility of a Dan Scuda and a Ryan Davis, and ultimately, if I'm the GM, I want to get my three best linebackers on the field somehow, which in my opinion are taking nothing away from Dan Scuda. But in today's NFL, which is a space game and a coverage game, and the flexibility that Telvin Smith, Paul Posluszny, and Miles Jack give you from a coverage standpoint is so valuable. And Dan Scuda is a guy that I think can play that Leo. He is stout against the run. If you've watched him, I think he's had very good pass rushes during camp. He's a crafty guy. I really like Dan Scuda because of the flexibility he gives you. And he's a guy also that if you went heavy during heavy rundowns and you needed a banger, he can play auto. And so with that flexibility, I'd rather go deeper with a guy like Tyson and Michael Bennett and Sheldon Day and Sendarek and maybe be heavy on the interior three, the big defensive lineman I need, and use the position flexibility I have in a Scuda and a Ryan Davis with the Leo.
A lot to watch next couple of weeks. The JTA Stadium Shuttle has a new name for 2016, the Game Day Express. New name, same great service, price, and locations. The Game Day Express, take it to the bank this Saturday. We'll look around the National Football League when we return. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, continues right now.
Check out Jack Hanania's Audi of Jacksonville on Blanding. You can lease a beautiful new A3 from just $229 a month. Head over today for details. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, Jaguars Thursday. Final few minutes here. Before we get around the league, Tom Coughlin in the house earlier this week to visit Bucks Jaguars practice the first day, and you guys got to spend a little time with the old ball coach.
Yeah, it was good to talk with him. We both visited with Tom quite a bit. Good to catch up with him and hear how his family's doing, how his wife Judy is doing, all the grandkids. And, you know, Tom's one of those guys that he's just got to stay busy, and he's got a very good role with the league office to where he's working with some of the coaches to kind of open up a line of communication between the coaches and the league office. And get the coach's input back to the league office. And I think that's very valuable, and it's a perfect role because Tom is highly respected around the league from all the coaches around the league. He can walk into any facility and immediately have respect and honest conversation, and so I think it's good for the league. It was funny to see him out there with a hat on, wide-brim hat, and sunglasses.
That was against the rules, right?
I was just
used to be.
I didn't say anything to him, but I almost forgot until somebody brought it up kind of after the fact, and I said, you know what? I need to find him today and bring up the fact that he's wearing sunglasses on the field. But he wasn't out there today. But if I saw him, I was going to bring up the point that he was wearing sunglasses, because that really should have been a finable offense, because back in the day, he didn't allow his coaches to wear sunglasses on the field, which is
just crazy.
Which is an asinine rule in because Florida. There's a Florida sun, you know.
They burn their retinas.
It was good to talk with him. Good to talk with him, and he's going to be traveling around the league. I think he's going to be working at the league office a couple days a week and then traveling a couple days a week. So it's good for him to stay involved, because he's somebody that has to stay involved, and he is certainly going to be a valuable resource for the league.
Brian Sexton had an exclusive interview with him. It's on Jaguars.com right now, so check it out after practice yesterday. Let's look around the National Football League. Six games tonight in preseason. Eagles at Steelers, Bengals at Lions, Falcons, Browns, Raiders at Packers, Bears at the Patriots, Vikings at the Seahawks. No Aaron Rodgers tonight. He's a scratch for the Packers.
Yeah, which is no surprise. I mean, he was going to be a scratch, too, for the Hall of Fame game. He didn't play last week either. You know, so, I mean, if you've got Aaron Rodgers and if you're a head coach, JP, Tony, would you play him at all?
I'd play him
week
serious.
Three.
Yeah, what's week two?
But
would you play him?
I'd play him week two and week three. I'd play him two series, week two.
Really?
And half on week two. Yeah, listen, it's still – I mean, I don't know if anyone forgot, but their offense was atrocious last year. They couldn't score. They couldn't move the ball. They got their Jordy Nelson's coming back from an ACL. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it's football. It's still timing, and that's a position I'm surprised he's not playing. I mean, Tom Brady's playing, and he's spent the first four games. I think the quarterback position
– I wouldn't play Tom Brady either.
Well, I would. Quarterback position is a position you have to go and get reps. I don't care how good you are, timing with your receivers, in the huddle, in and out. And if you want to protect the guy, keep it short routes, you know, short game, three-step, five-step, get the ball out of his hand. I understand coaches' fears of not wanting to get guys hurt before the real stuff starts. Opening day, but you have to practice. You have to work on things. You have to have timing, especially at that position and at all positions. And so, I think you can be too cautious and end up hurting yourself. And I'll go back to what I said a second ago. It's not like that offense was lighting it up last year. They struggled mightily.
Speaking of the Packers, Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, and Steelers' James Harrison will have to meet with investigators regarding the Al Jazeera America PED report. They were facing a possible suspension for conduct detrimental to the league. They will meet with the league.
Well, yeah. Let me correct one thing you said. They will have to meet with the league. No, they don't have to.
But they are doing it.
They have chosen to do so,
right.
Which I think is I think it's ridiculous that the league – threatened the players on this. I think that's downright embarrassing. You've got an accusation that was made from a guy that recanted his story. Peyton Manning was interviewed and it was just thrown out the window. Peyton Manning's been totally cleared. And so what would give you reason to continue an investigation in this fashion? I don't have a problem if they've got some questions, but the way they've gone about it as a league, I think it's poor. You don't come out and leak something to the media before the players got any communication from the league about it, because that's what happened. Information was put out to the media before the players, all of them, got the letters from the league that was talking about what may happen if you don't. I mean, just the stance of it and the formality of releasing this information out, I think that was poor. I mean, have a little respect for your players in the league, you know, because, you know, here's the problem that I have with it. Let's say that some guy creates a new website and decides to make some accusations. As the league, aren't you almost obligated to now and to investigate any garbage claim that somebody may have when this story was supposedly recanted? I mean, I think it set a bad precedent, and I think it creates more of an acrimonious relationship between the Players Association, the players themselves, and the league, and I think it was unnecessary.
Well, listen, the relationship between the league and the NFLPA can't be any worse, so I don't know if that matters. The league's in its full right to demand the players be interviewed. The NFL...
That's arguable.
No, the NFLPA...
That is arguable.
And the union, when they negotiated the CBA, gave full rights to Roger Goodell as judge, executioner, jury, everything. He has the full right to investigate these claims. And to... I mean, they negotiated that. I'm with Jeff, however, to think it's a terrible precedent for the league and Roger Goodell to set. Because it opens up the question, so are players automatically guilty when anybody says anything, even if there is absolutely zero proof that they did anything wrong?
They haven't failed a test?
They haven't failed a test. They've done nothing wrong except for some crazy guy to an organization, Al Jazeera, that says that they were dirty, that was being recanted. They should have put it to bed, said there's nothing to look here, we're moving on. I don't like the precedent set.
We'll see what happens with the Jags and the Bucks Saturday night. That's it for Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.